Hi everyone, and welcome to another Freshfields Digital podcast on cybersecurity. I'm here with Tim Harkness and Peter Jaffe. Guys, would you like to introduce yourselves?
My name's Tim Harkness. I'm a litigator based out of the Freshfields office in New York, who has a particular focus on cybersecurity and data issues.
Hi, I'm Peter Jaffe. I'm a senior associate litigator based out of Washington. And like Tim, I have been focusing increasingly on cybersecurity and data issues over the past few years.
Thank you both. And I'm Rodri Thomas, a partner in Freshfields' cybersecurity team here in London. In this podcast, we're going to be talking about the role of external counsel in the aftermath of a cyber incident. So Tim, kick us off. Why would you get a lawyer involved if you've just suffered a cyber attack?
Well, I think it's just the same sort of reflex that people have had traditionally when there's a serious threat to the organization. Getting lawyers involved can be very helpful in a couple of respects. First, if you're talking about personal data, there are probably going to be regulatory issues that a company is going to have to deal with pretty quickly. Public companies in the United States might have reporting obligations above and beyond that, and there might be other regulatory issues that you have to be sensitive about. So that's one thing. Second is that we're seeing more and more that the hacks implicate contractual rights or obligations of our clients. So if company A has some of its data stolen, and it might not be personal data, but it's data given by a contractual counterparty, the lawyers have to know, well, what are the contractual obligations the company has? Do you have defenses? If there's been a wire transfer improperly, how do you sort that out? Those are all legal questions. And then the third thing that comes up from time to time is that the company might be able to do things about it. There might be legal moves they can make in court or work with the contractual counterparties who might also be impacted to figure out how to reduce the risk or reduce the financial harm to the company caused by a hack.
Yeah, and this is Peter. Let me make that a little bit more concrete. You know, we had a client who suffered a hack and they lost about $1 million. But they didn't even quite realize it until a month later. They didn't bring us in until later. And so we advised them on exactly what kind of letter to write to their bank to try to reverse the transfers. You know, we built in language that mirrored some of the applicable statutes so that the bank would sort of understand the seriousness of it. But nonetheless, it was just a little bit too late to get things done. But when that same client suffered a similar incident about 2 months later, they had that language and the form that the lawyers had thought of that was reflecting the statutory scheme. They had that letter right there ready to go. They got it to the bank very quickly. And this time the bank sort of looked at the letter, realized what laws we were invoking, why we were telling it to do what it did, and they were able to reverse the transfers and actually avoid the loss. So there's something about knowing the statutory scheme that will make it much easier to deal with some of your counterparties to mitigate the losses.
I think that's absolutely right, Peter. And speed of engagement, particularly with whoever your external advisors are, whether they're cyber forensic experts or whether they're lawyers, is absolutely critical. So I worked on a case a few years ago where we were involved very early on, and a company in continental Europe had suffered an attack, and that had involved lots of money, several tens of millions, being taken out of the company and sent to the UK, to a company's bank account in the UK, and then on from the UK into Hong Kong, and then from Hong Kong into the PRC. And we were able to put the company in the UK into administration very quickly, and that stopped some of the cash from escaping to Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, we were able to get freezing injunctions against the bank accounts where the money had been transferred, and so again, able to stop the flow of some of the cash escaping from the company. Now, cyber criminals are very intelligent people, a lot of them are, and they know that if they move money from one bank account to another and they break it up, so they move 50 million into two accounts of 25 million and then 10 into one and then 10 into another, 5 into another, and keep on doing this into lots of different bank accounts in lots of different countries, then eventually it becomes very expensive and very difficult to instruct lawyers to, you know, seek out freeze injunctions against lots of different countries. So again, early engagement was absolutely critical there in helping the company that had suffered the fraud to recover some of the cash.
The other thing that a lot of clients are doing is engaging lawyers early on, even before a hack, to do privileged reviews. So that way they're getting advice about whether or not they're compliant with their legal obligations fixing things, and then having third-party auditors come in and sort of double-check in those second audits wouldn't be privileged. And the reason to do that is that way, if there is a problem down the line, particularly if there's litigation, which does happen in the U.S. Post-hack, that you know they can shield some of their dirty laundry, if you will, from inquiry because of privilege. So being able to look critically at a control environment, the behaviors, that kind of thing, with the assistance of counsel can doesn't necessarily have to create a paper trail of a company being irresponsible. I think on the contrary, if you have a proper privilege review going to the board with a report and then subsequent remediation, that makes the company, A, it is reasonable to do that, B, it will make the company look reasonable if they ever have to justify themselves to regulators.
Yeah, privilege is a great point, Tim. I think even post-breach privilege is a really important question, particularly if you're going to have regulators, potential litigants crawling all over your incident response. And knowing which documents should be privileged and which shouldn't be is you know, it's a very important thing. Decision logs in the sort of immediate hours after the breach are a really, really important document so you can justify to your investors, your shareholders, your counterparties, your regulators, you know, exactly the steps you took. And sometimes even if you make a wrong decision, if you've got a decision-making log which explains quite clearly and logically the reasons why you took the steps that you took, then that's going to go a long way in your defense very often.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess the other point I would say is that we're seeing clients get tripped up with insurance notifications. A lot of people have purchased cyber insurance policies or have extended their D&O cover to include cyber instances. And the notice provisions of those policies are pretty tough. So I think that when there's a material breach, companies really should do a couple things immediately. Number one is make sure their response team, which should include IT, business, and legal, is all together. And at the same time, they should be pulling out their policy and knowing exactly what they need to do if they're going to get cover for that that work. Because the forensic work can be really expensive. And if you purchase cover, it's a shame not to have it because you delayed notification by a week.
Well, thank you all very much for listening, and special thanks to Tim and Peter for joining on this.
My pleasure.
Of course.
If you'd like to find out more information, please do visit our website, freshfields.com/digital, where we have lots of interesting materials on cybersecurity.